Hi, you're listening to Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devery. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Hey, Creeps, I'm Laura, and with me tonight I have my awesome co-host, Tanya.
Hi.
Tanya, who is our special guest tonight?
We have Paul Bestel from Ghost Story Guys and Mysteries and Monsters and
Hi,
other
Paul.
stuff.
Hello, and thank you for the invitation. It's nice to join you.
Oh,
thank
yes.
You.
Thank
so,
you for
like
coming
she
on.
Said, you do Mysteries and Monsters and the Ghost Story Guys. And what's this other stuff that she's talking about for people who don't know?
Well, what don't I don't know. I mean, I've started writing for Haunted magazine, which is available all around the world. So I've started that, and obviously I've finally started writing a book about poltergeists. On top of having a full time job and six pets, and trying to prepare for my first ever talk at a conference later this year. So, you know, I just need extra hours in the day, I think, really. So I'm not really sure. I agree to these things, and then I suddenly think, oh, there's only 24 hours in this day.
Right.
Right. So, exactly.
And I've just done another foreword for another book for someone else who very kindly asked me to do that. So yes, you know, just throw projects at me and I'll see what I can do.
All right.
Great. That works.
Good to know.
I only knew that you had like a couple animals. What are all these animals? I knew you had a new doggie and you have a cat, but I didn't know what other ones you had.
I've got five cats.
Okay, I have eight cats. I beat you.
five cats and a dog who is currently fast asleep. He's
still a puppy.
Yeah, so he's had his evening walk, so he's just laid down, relaxing now and chilling out, and probably wondering why I'm talking to the wall.
He looks
so
like
your...
Laura. Oh, I was just gonna say he looks like Chevy and Fred. He's black and white too, like that.
I was gonna ask, like,
exactly.
What kind of dogs and what the names are.
Yeah, so he's called Theo. So we adopted him from a shelter. So he's already been given up as a pup, I think, because he's a pointer spaniel cross. So he's clever, he's cheeky, and he needs attention and training. So I think they thought, yes, he's beautiful, but he's a pain in the bum. But he's not a pain in the bum. He's just inquisitive and intelligent. So yeah, exactly. So we've had him 2 months now, settling in. He's finally stopped trying to eat everything. which could have been interesting. But so yeah, he's doing well, and we've got five cats who are all rescue as well. So
that's great.
We've got Tinsel, who we adopted strangely over Christmas, as you may imagine. And my partner had two cats when we first met, and they're Poppy and Pixie, black cats. And then we've also now got Tia and Bilbo, who are my daughter's cats, and she's gone back to university. So we've taken those in as well. So, yes, I'm just looking for an alpaca. And, you know, I'm trying to catch
You'll
up with
set.
Brett Manning and see if I can get a pig.
I would love a pig. Yeah, Brett Manning has a pig now. I saw that. She has a little black pig.
Yeah, bristle.
I would love to have that. Yeah, I think so.
One of my friends has a pig, and it's huge.
Mm. Yeah, they don't stay little. People get them thinking they're going to be like, and they're not. Even potbelly pigs can get really big.
Yeah.
I still want one. I love pigs. They're so cute.
All right. So, Paul, tell us about your podcast. I don't know which one you want to talk about first.
Well, I'll start with mine, because Mysteries and Monsters started first. So it's just 4 years ago, which seems like a million years ago now. in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
Which was sort of born the year previously that my brother had basically been on me for a long time, because we'd been listening to podcasts for the best part of 10 years. So over here, podcasts didn't really sort of take off till the mid 10s, really about 2014, 2015. But my brother had been a big downloader of shows sort of in the noughties, and got me in to programs like Jim Harold and The Unexplained.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. So I'd kind of really gravitated over from television to podcasts in regards for my 40 and entertainment. So I was bitten by the bug, and essentially just started listening to people like Micah Hanks. And then that kind of led on to other shows like Into the Fray. And then that's how I first heard of Brennan, because he was a guest with Shannon and Monsters
right,
and
Mollies
and Derek. So it's kind of like a gateway drug. Once you start with it, it kind of leads you off, and that's it.
It
you say goodbye to the to the real world, and away you go.
Yeah,
you know. And here I am in the middle of the Peak District, listening to people talking about Bigfoot running around British Columbia, which is you know, completely alien to that. But I just loved it, and I've always had a real interest in this. These subjects for as long as I was a young child. I was always deeply fascinated by monsters and ghosts and UFOs and strange rains of fish from the sky and Bermuda Triangle and all that that excites you when you're 9 years old. And
exactly.
So after a while, my brother just basically said, well, why don't you should do this. And I was like, no, what's to listen to me waffling on? And he kind of wore me down for a bit, and then I got seriously ill with my mental health for a long time. I probably lost the best part of 10 years
wow,
with, you know, bouncing from job to job and just self-medicating, I think the term is, shall we say. I was basically lost, and I just thought, you know, I'm in my mid 40s and I just felt worthless. I just thought that, you know, it's nothing. And I'd gone as far as I could, and thankfully was very fortunate that I'm still here, to be honest, because it got extremely serious. And I made steps to recover. And so I was signed off work, and I was in bed, and I was thought, you know, what's gonna reignite my passion? And I'd still got some of my old books, because I'd not really read a lot or kept up to date other than listening to podcasts about the paranormal and stuff. So I started reading some of the books I'd had for like the best part of 30 years, and I'd still kept them, even though I'd probably not opened them for the best part of 25 years. And I started reading one, which was John and Ann Spencer's compendium on ghosts.
Ooh,
which
okay.
is one of those amazing books that came out in the 80s. That was, I think it was on a Reader's Digest and the old book clubs where people would just buy.
Oh, yeah.
It. And I discovered that that book had sold 600,000 copies.
Wow.
And I was just gobsmacked by it. But I started rereading it again, and it struck me how many of the stories I just had either forgotten or just weren't aware of. And there was one particular poltergeist story here in the UK that I'd never heard of. And I just thought, I don't understand why I've never heard of this story in the modern era. Mm-hmm. And that story just sort of lit a fire under me. I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but it just ignited me. And I just suddenly felt, this is it. I don't know what this poltergeist is going to do for me, but it's got me wanting to get up tomorrow. It's wanting me to find out more about it. So it's all about a poltergeist from the 1950s, I think. And I joke sometimes with people that, you know, it probably saved my life, because it finally gave me a reignition of my passion and my love. Mm-hmm. And within, I don't know, within about 6 months, I suddenly felt more inspired and creative and positive, because I knew nothing about what I knew about podcasting 5 years ago. You could fit on the back of a stamp.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I've come completely from ground zero in regards to any sort of input or creative aspects to what I'd done previously to that. So yeah, it was all from that on. So yes, a poltergeist from the mid-50s here in the UK sort of kicked it all off, and it was just a case of how when I finally felt brave enough to do it, I bought my microphone and it sat staring at me for 6 months. Sort of a bit like the Telltale Heart and Edgar Allan Poe, sort of teasing me and whispering at me in at the dark of night, going, use me. So it started from there, and I just thought, well, let's send a few emails out and see if people are interested. And amazingly, some people were. Mm-hmm. And that's where it started from, even though I had the awful debut of the very first interview I did was with Lyle Blackburn. And it didn't
That's
record.
A great first guest.
Yeah, it was.
It didn't record. We've had that issue a couple of times with stuff.
it recorded me, but and not that him. Was it. And not nothing. Mm. And I was like, oh God. Oh. And I was like, I knew this was a bad idea. I'm rubbish. And I just told him, and he said, well, hey, that's fine. It's happened before. Redo it in 3 weeks. It's fine. I'll be fresh. We can go for it again. And we took it from there. And
that's awesome.
Well, good. That is awesome.
And that was it. And now I just like to try and do 5 in a week just to just
that's
to keep
crazy.
Going.
That is a lot.
I think the most I've done is 3, and that's like pushing my limit.
Yeah. Well, it's Tuesday, and this is my 3rd show of the week.
Wow.
And it's almost midnight
my
there.
First.
So.
Yeah. I did Texas yesterday, a lady from Texas. And Leicestershire today here in the UK. And I've got 2 more to do this week as well.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So
I don't know how you find the time. So tell us about Ghost Story Guys, because you are also on that.
Co-hoster, yeah.
Yeah, because I needed something else to fill more days of the week. Right. So
you sleep.
Sometimes. Yeah. So I've been doing that now for just over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Which is, once again, it's crazy when I think about it, because it flies by. And we have sort of mammoth recording sessions, because obviously Brendan's based in Canada. And like I said to you, the first time I heard of Brennan was on Into the Fray with Shannon. And it's quite funny thinking, I don't know, 7 years later to be the fast friends that we've become, sort of hands across the ocean.
Yeah.
But we'd always got on, and I obviously listened to the Ghost Story Guys on the back of his interview on Into the Fray. So I was a fan of the show anyway.
Yeah.
I had the books, so I knew about it, and I listened to it religiously and loved it. And we just sort of, I don't know, we just started talking, and then Brendan was always sort of giving me sort of constructive feedback and mm-hmm. constructive criticism.
He's good at that.
Yes.
Yeah, he's done that with
us. Yes.
And sort of tidying things up and helping me, and obviously had been a guest on the show a couple of times as well for me. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of hit it off. And I think we just had a love of weird music, terrible films, and the paranormal. And it's just kind of come from there. And it was, I was very flattered to be asked to join. I was a bit concerned, as you are sometimes when situations occur, but I think often you have to kind of move forward and look at what you're going to do rather than anything else. And, here we are, 60 episodes in. So it's great. And for me, it gives me a whole new perspective, because obviously I'm dealing with a lot of stories and experiences from North America, which under mm-hmm. normal circumstances, I'd have no exposure to. And obviously it's a bit more lighthearted and near the knuckle than my show, though it depends on my guests. So it allows me to kind of relax and not try and be as hyper focused as I am on my particular show, because I would say I'm very anally retentive, because I read every book that whenever I've got a guest on, I have read their book 100%. You know, on top of everything else I have to do, I also read like a librarian, trying to set a world record as well.
One thing you guys do on the Ghost Story Guys that I liked, you were talking about mental health. You guys do that ad every time. Well, you say it's not an ad, and it's not an ad, but you talk about, you give the phone numbers for the suicide hotlines and all that. I think that's really great. I really do, because I think a lot of people are glad about that.
Yeah.
It's something that's, you know, obviously, as I've just shared with you both, you know, I'm always been very open with my battles with mental health throughout mm-hmm. my life. I've lost too many friends to suicide. Without wishing to sort of put a downer on the conversation, my 40th birthday was bookended 3 days before and 3 days after with two of my oldest friends both took their own lives. Which was not how you want to approach a milestone in your life regardless. And it's something, because of where I came from and the lifestyles and the opportunities at that mm-hmm. point, that we all sort of came up through a very difficult and challenging time. And for some of us, we will always carry that baggage with us. And some of us have been able to sort of ride, by the grace of God, the journey that life has given us. So it's something we're very passionate and supportive about. And we want people to be open. Obviously, things have come on a long way over the last mm-hmm. 10 or 15 years, especially for men.
Yes. Yes.
The stigma of not being man and all that nonsense. Right. Because especially here in the UK, I'm not sure what the statistics are, but it's the biggest killer of men in their 40s here in the UK, suicide.
I think it is here too. Oh. I really do.
Yeah.
My husband 6 years ago committed suicide. So I'm right there with you as far as losing friends and stuff and all of that. And it is a big stigma for men, because it's like, you can't go and talk about it with somebody without them saying, oh, you know, man up, you know?
Right.
And that's awful, because guys have feelings too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like a stigma of, you know, act tough. You're a man. Like, you don't show your feelings.
Don't cry or whatever.
Yeah.
I've never been one of them. I think it's important, but it allows us to break this down and deal with it, because clearly there is a problem.
Yes.
And this, the people have got softies is rubbish. It's simply not true. I think if you think people have got softer and that's the reason for what's going on, then you've not been paying attention. Surely it's the opposite. And everybody can do better. And I think obviously with the challenges we all face and the pressures of the modern world and social media and mm-hmm. you know, how the world seems to be going to hell in a handcart over the last 10 years.
That's very true.
you know, especially with what's going on over here in Europe recently. But that's kind of taken me back to my childhood in the 80s, where we were at threat of nuclear war every week, it seemed. So if nothing else, we got some damn good music out of it.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s. I graduated in 85. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. We got some really good music, but we had to worry about Russia and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we were stuck in the middle. We were just worrying about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true, because y'all were actually closer over there.
Yeah, it's not that far. And obviously the BBC did a very terrifying docudrama in the mid-80s called Threads, which was about mm-hmm. a nuclear attack on Sheffield.
Oh my gosh, and that's where you're at.
Yeah. So
wow.
So
that's great.
yeah, exactly. So it still terrifies people to this day. It is
very
It's very challenging. It's available all over the place. I remember when I told Brennan about it, and he had nightmares after watching it, because he just said it's awful. Because even though it's 40 years old, it's unremarkably bleak still.
Oh, yeah. With all the political climate over there, over here, it's scary. It's depressing mm-hmm. just to think about all of that.
Mm. Yeah.
On to better stuff.
Yes, onwards and upwards.
Happy stuff.
Okay, so Paul, you said you know, were interested in the stuff like when you're nine, reading the books about Bermuda Triangle and, you know, all that stuff. So have you had any experiences when you're little or even today?
Well, I grew up in a haunted house. So
Tanya's shaking her head like,
I've heard this stuff.
Tell us the story. So for people who don't know, can you tell us some stories?
Of course, I'd be delighted. Yes.
Okay.
The first family home we had was a converted vicarage that was built in 1746, I think it was.
That would be so cool. We don't have nothing old like that.
Yeah. So it was straight across from the church as well. Mm-hmm. So it was literally 30 yards from the front door to the graveyard.
Oh, wow.
And it's a beautiful church. It's a very well maintained graveyard. It's beautiful. It really is. And it would have been a stunning building, but it was like, you know, the 70s. So it had been split into three separate houses, and it looked spooky anyway, especially at night. Very similar to when Max von Sydow turns up at Regan's house in The Exorcist when the streetlight's there, especially in those days as well, because it was a big coal mining area. So we used to have really heavy fog.
That makes it worse.
That looks spooky.
So it's one of those things that when I got to about 15 or 16, we very rarely had fog. But when I was a child growing up, it was like whenever it was winter, it would be really like proper. You wouldn't be able to see sort of 50 yards.
Because
all the coal dust.
That's crazy.
In the air.
You know,
we'd play What Colour Will the River Be This Week with all the rubbish being pumped into it and stuff, you know. So it was you know, first house. My parents were very young at the time, and everything was okay for the first sort of couple of years, and then they started to do some gardening one particular day, and there was a clang, and my stepfather uncovered a child's grave stone in the front yard, sort of not far down.
Wow.
I don't know, maybe 6-8 inches from the top, wasn't buried a lot. And from that point on, we got somebody else moving in the house, really. But it was never malicious. I think sometimes you can look back and think of certain events and think, oh, well, that's a bit frightening. Like there was a mysterious incident where I went flying. You know, we were joking earlier about how many bones I've broken. And I went flying in the toilet, because it had a separate toilet. It was a very strangely built house. The bath was in my parents' bedroom. If you wanted a bath, you had to go into my parents' bedroom. It wasn't like an ensuite. It was just a bath in their bedroom.
In the bedroom? Oh, wow. Yeah.
So the toilet was separate, and it was on like a step. And I ended up, I went flying in there one night, smashed my face on the toilet bowl and broke my cheekbone.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And I was convinced I'd been pushed. And they said, oh, no, you've tripped. You've tripped. And my mum slipped on a doll that had been left on a stair and sort of snapped her toe in half, to the point that the bone imploded. She had to have it removed.
And my goodness.
We were thinking, oh, my brother must have put the doll on the stand, but he was the other side of the room, and I'd not used it. I'd been trying to find this doll, and it just turned up. We used to have footsteps up and down. But the comical thing about it is we always knew something was about to happen because the toilet would flush.
That's weird.
Because it was an old
That was
old
like
fashioned,
your warning?
Yeah, it was like a pull chain. So as soon as the toilet, primarily because, you know, if nobody's upstairs and the toilet flushes, are you like, who on earth doing that? Then stuff would happen. And it wasn't, you know, we weren't seeing furniture fly across the room and stuff, but there was just really weird, subtle things. I mean, my mum was convinced that I'd got somebody coming to visit me every night in my room, because she'd hear me talking to an old chap. And apparently I would have lovely conversations with this man, but he wasn't what was in the rest of the house. He was only in my room. He wasn't in the rest of the house. So I never saw him anywhere else in the house other than my bedroom. And he'd always sit on my end of my bed and talk to me about history and things, apparently. I don't remember much about it.
I was just going to ask if you remember. Yeah.
The only thing I remember him is he once showed me, because I had the window that looked out onto the back garden and a bit of waste ground behind it next to the road. Sort of the opposite side to where the graveyard was. And I remember once he got said, oh, look at all these. And there were just loads of tents outside. Now, there was never any tents there, ever. So I have no idea what that was, whether it was some kind of lucid dream or whatever. But that's the only real thing I remember of a conversation with him, other than sort of snatches and him sitting on the edge of my bed. But as I say,
now, did he look like a real person to you? I mean, was he, you know, like people say, like they were kind of misty or shadowy or see-through, but was it just looked like a normal everyday person? Just right. Okay.
Yeah. My mum was convinced it was her granddad who died when I was two. So I didn't really know him. And apparently he loved me to bits.
Aww.
So she was convinced it was him coming to look after me and make sure I was okay.
I'm sure that'll make her feel better too. Mm-hmm. Thinking, yeah.
But whatever. He wasn't everywhere else. So we had all kinds of weird, like things would just drop out the ceiling, and you know, cupboard doors would be open, toilet would flush all the time, the bath would fill up, but only cold water, not hot, and it would always be just underneath the top of the bath. So it would just be about to overflow. So it would never sort of flood. I think the strangest one was that my parents went to bed, and when they got up in the morning, the carpet had been rolled up. But it had been rolled up under the bed. So the bed had to be lifted for the carpet to be rolled under it.
Wow.
Do you think you guys, like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go. No, you go.
I was just going to say, do you guys think that it was spirit of whatever you uncovered of the child? Do you think it was like an obnoxious child doing it? Well, or
I mean, I didn't think it was obnoxious. I to be honest, if I was a young ghost floating about, it's the kind of stuff I'd do, to be honest.
It seems like a playful type thing.
because like I say, a lot of it wasn't, you know, it wasn't frightened. We weren't scared. I mean, people would come to the house and they were scared.
Right.
But it's one of those things. It's like Stockholm syndrome, I suppose, that you get so used to it. I mean, we used to have babysitters who'd come and wouldn't want to stay on their own with just us, because stuff would just drop out the ceiling, or you'd get weird things. And it was odd sometimes. I remember once going to bed and getting up and thinking it was first thing in the morning, and apparently I'd been asleep 40 minutes, but I was convinced it was morning because they told me it was morning.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't tell them who had told me it was morning. I just kept saying, they've told me it's morning, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
So it was a bit weird. And so we kind of just got on with it, because it wasn't regular. It was very irregular, as most sort of hauntings are. And it wasn't, like I say, you know, we didn't come downstairs and all the furniture was upside down and stuff. It was just, I suppose you could say it was playful, especially knowing now what I know about the world of the paranormal. Right.
It could have been worse.
We got a free pass, a clear run at that. And so it was just one of those things. And then we moved out of that house, and within 2 years, my auntie, who was a publican in Cheshire, took over a pub, and they'd got a poltergeist in the pub. So basically we only had 2 years without a ghost for probably the first 10, 12 years of my life, because we used to go to my auntie's quite a lot to stop there anyway. And so we'd go in and see what Fred the poltergeist was up to. And he was extremely, he enjoyed scaring people, but not in a bad way. He just used to do things that would make people question reality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Shall we say?
That's so cool.
So did everyone just think, oh, it's just a ghost, like no big deal? Or I mean, or were people like, you guys are crazy, like that's not a ghost, it's just your imagination, like in your family?
No, because my family's odd. So I always in two camps. My stepfather ended up becoming a doctor of chemistry. My mum was very spiritual, so I basically had yin and yang of belief and skepticism, which I always consider myself to be quite skeptical. which may sound a bit odd when you talk about these particular subjects, but I think you have to question things and what goes on, because there are so many stories that have become ingrained in the paranormal that either aren't right. true or right. are just complete exaggerations. And I'm sure you guys, when you were growing up in your local neighborhood, there was always a terrible story about an awful murder that happened at a house, or a tragedy where children were burnt in a house fire and stuff. And then when you get to a certain age, you can dig into it. There's absolutely no evidence of this.
Right.
Right. Right.
And we had that as well. There was an old spooky house around the corner from where, you know, not our house, somewhere else. And that was supposed to be that. And there was nothing, mm-hmm. nothing bad had happened there at all. I mean, growing up, there was a horrible story that happened.
Yeah.
A couple of villages away, but it wasn't anything to do with that. And we didn't know anything about that till about 10 years later. And that's a terrifying story of a awful murder. somebody who had a nervous breakdown through believing that he was possessed, but he wasn't.
Oh.
He was seriously mentally ill.
Yeah.
People didn't realize it and thought he's not ill, he's possessed, and treated him right. as he was possessed, not that he was ill. And it's awful.
I think that happens a lot, is they think somebody yeah. is possessed or something like that. And it's just that they've got a mental illness. I think you guys even did, you and Brennan did a story about that, that there was I think it was a lady maybe that had something wrong with her, but people thought that she was possessed. And it was just like it was like an actual disease of her brain that she had. Mm. So I think that a lot of people got hurt in the name of possession.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I don't believe it happens, but I'm very aware that particular case is very, you know, and I don't wish to go into details.
Yeah.
I will let you know off air so you can read it in your leisure, but I would advise you to read it in the daytime, because it is horrific.
Oh gosh. Okay.
It's so bad. Wow. Most true crime podcasts won't touch it. That's how bad it is.
Oh, wow. And they touch a lot of stuff.
That says a lot these days.
That says a lot. Okay, yeah. Yeah, make sure you tell us, because I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So really, I didn't really have much choice.
Right.
It was, I was born into it and lived it and then just became obsessed with it. And like I say, up until I was about 12 or 13, I just devoured everything I could read, everything I could watch.
So that inspire you, like having all these experiences and living in your haunted house, did that inspire you to go get the books and were you like trying to figure out what it was, or you just knew it was a ghost and you just wanted to know more about all the spooky stuff and cryptids and all that stuff?
I was just fascinated by it all.
Okay.
Absolutely fascinated. I just, because, you know, and I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet, I was quite a bright child. So I was one of those, I would always ask questions. You know, why does it do?
Okay.
And people would give me an answer. And I'd go, yeah, but why? Why does that happen? Why is this going on? What does that mean? What does that do? So when people say, oh, there's no such thing. And I say, well, thousands and millions of people are having these experiences. Therefore, there's something happening on some level,
right.
You know, even when you're 10, if people keep talking about ghosts, then, you know, and obviously my grandmother was obsessed with the paranormal and was very well connected in the British medium scene for quite a long time before she became too ill to sort of participate fully. So like I said, and then we've got the poltergeist in Cheshire that was hanging around in the pub and stuff. So it was always there for me at a very impressionable age, and I loved horror films as a child that my older cousins couldn't watch and I could, and my mum was always saying, well, he understands it's a film, he knows it's not real, but he enjoys watching it. So I was obsessed with Universal monsters and Godzilla and Spider-Man and, you know, things that 6 and 7 year olds growing up in England at that time probably weren't exposed to a lot of, and you know, they encouraged me that, and I read like a, you know, voraciously as a child. I was
that's good.
always read. I was always reading, you know, which is probably why I read as much as I still do. It's something I absolutely love to do, and I've always done so. So, and we were quite lucky at that point when I was that age as well. We had some great TV shows that appeared, and the media began to cover stuff, because obviously the Enfield Poltergeist happened at the end of the 70s. And so the media at that point was still here in the UK. They would still print stories about ghosts, and you'd hear certain things. And we had a famous story in the town I grew up in Barnsley in North England, where there was a possessed walking stick that would perform for people that made it on the news. So that was quite a famous case. So it was just something I just found absolutely fascinating. That was before I even found out about things like the Bermuda Triangle and the,
right,
you know, and the Money Pit and Caspar Hauser and you know, the Counts of Saint Germain, and suddenly I was like, oh my god,
right, yeah, there's tons
everything's
of stuff.
So weird.
Yeah. So have you had an experience as an adult, or did everything just
well,
I'd say that's a yeah.
Yeah, his little laugh.
most of my adult life has been fairly sort of unconnected. There's been a few little things and odd things that you go, But the house I live in now, we moved in here just under 2 years ago. Hmm. And my partner's not from Sheffield. And we've moved to quite a leafy place. Well, Sheffield's quite leafy anyway. It's very green, lots of trees and parks everywhere. And so where we live is sort of on the cusp of a couple of local parks. And it's very nice, very pleasant, lots of lovely amenities and bars and restaurants near where we live, but it's far enough out of town not to be a pain in the backside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was really confused, because she didn't understand why all the houses are so different on the same street. They're all, you know, you have some old-fashioned houses, and then you'd have a modern build, and then you'd have apartments, and it was all a bit of a hodgepodge. So I said, it must have been down to the Blitz, because Sheffield got bombed quite heavily.
Oh, okay.
War.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 660 people were killed in two attacks, which happened at night in December 1940. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, well, it's obviously. So I'd never really looked into it a lot. So we thought, oh, well, we'll have a look, see if there's any bombs dropped around here. So we started reading and watching a few documentaries that you can look at on YouTube and things about the Sheffield Blitz. And obviously we discovered that the city centre burnt down, and 80 people were killed in a hotel, because they were all hiding in the cellar and a bomb hit it directly.
Yeah.
Seven people survived. They're not sure how many people were actually in there, because there were more bits than people. That's all I'll say.
So
they're not sure how many is, but they say it's about 70 odd. And so we were looking, and suddenly I noticed our address, our street was on there.
Oh.
And it was the house next door. And it had taken
a direct
hit and been blown to smithereens. The house I'm in was built in 1950, because there was a massive crater here. there were seven people, an entire family in the house next door, and they were all killed.
Wow.
The bomb went straight through three floors. And just left a massive crater, and there was bomb marks all over. I mean, we still, when they're doing major work in Sheffield, they will still uncover bombs to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's probably not been one found for about 4 or 5 years, but whenever they're doing any major excavations, they tend more often than not, they will find one or two. There's definitely been a good half a dozen found probably in the last 20 years, because they dropped so many, and some of them just went straight in, you know, and crazy stories about people whose bomb shelters in their back garden, and their house was blown up, or they went out to get something, and then when they came back, the house had gone. It's crazy. So once we sort of did that, about a week later, we start getting sort of like clouds of cigarette smoke in the house. Now, as a former,
like, you
smoker,
could see them.
No, you can smell it.
Smell it.
Oh, okay.
So, as a former smoker, I'm quite aware of what it smells like. But I was one of those outside smokers. I would always smoke cigarettes outside because I'd rather make everybody else smell rather than just me. and so I quit at the beginning of the pandemic, strangely enough. I thought, you know, the best way to deal with a highly tense situation is to quit it.
It's a quit smoking,
addiction.
Yeah.
Deal with a severe addiction withdrawal. We suddenly started noticing really pungent, like you'd walked into a room and somebody was having a cigarette.
Yeah.
But it would move around the property. So there'd be sometimes where you'd be laid in bed and you would suddenly go, oh, and you would smell it, or you would be in the front room and you would suddenly get a waft of it. And
yeah,
there's nobody beneath us, there's nobody smoking outside, there's nobody smoking above us. Where's it coming from? And it doesn't happen right all the time. It just comes. And like I say, if it was happening in one particular room, I would think, well, maybe it's coming from somehow
right
that air current might be pulling it from
right
three doors up the street
outside or something. Mm-hmm.
But it isn't, and it affects bedrooms and bathrooms. Like we've been in the I've been in the bath, and suddenly I've gone, oh, what? And you can smell it,
yeah.
And then you can walk in and out of it as well. So it's like a focused aroma.
Oh wow!
And it goes, and other people can smell it as well. So it's not just me going mad
with like a phantom smell or something. Yeah.
That's probably the most concrete thing I can point to. We've had a couple of, you know, weird things like the doors opened and closed, but you know, you've got pets, so
right.
Whilst you may not think they're responsible, you never know.
Yeah, but they usually don't close the door.
Yeah. Well, they're certainly not smoking cigarettes. I know that.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
You never know. What goes on when we're asleep? Who can say?
That's true. They could have picked up the bad habit.
Yeah. They've made complete movies about stuff like that.
Yeah. Wouldn't be the first person I've led astray in my younger years, yes.
So, Paul, can you tell us like a local legend that's near you? It could be a cryptid or a paranormal story. I know you've already shared lots of local history already, but.
I'm just doing a bit of research for a new article where I'm looking into sightings of shooks here in Sheffield, which is obviously the infamous giant black dogs that are notable.
They're everywhere.
Yes, they are. I was amazed to discover how prevalent they are in North America, which was something I just wasn't aware of outside of Native American and First Nations stories. I was always convinced it was predominantly a British and European phenomenon, but it clearly isn't. I spoke with Kevin Lee Nelson, who's writing a book about hellhounds in North America. And I was amazed at things like that. I wasn't aware of anything to do with sort of the trucker lore about seeing a giant black dog and things. And it really surprised me how many stories there are out there. So here in Sheffield, it's not known for it, but there are three or four. And there's one, we've got what's called the Botanical Gardens, which is sort of a Victorian garden that was built to enable the public to come and appreciate flowers, thanks to wealthy benefactors. So get out the steel work, you know, and you're one day a week off, you can go and walk around some nice gardens, and they're still there. They're extremely popular, very beautiful. It's in a very very pretty area of Sheffield, and one of, like I say, numerous things. And at the end of the 19th century, there was a young man walking home after a hard day's work, and as he passed the botanical gardens, he was set upon by a giant black dog with fiery eyes. Now, this made it to the local paper because he called the police, ripped his clothes, and it was scared off, I believe, by passers-by and sort of bounded away into the night. So I was intrigued that Sheffield wouldn't normally have those type of stories. We have them other places in Yorkshire, the East Coast, up on the North Yorkshire Moors, obviously Bronte sisters utilized the legend of the Shook, and there are different names like the Barguest and Padfoot, depending on where you are. So it was interesting. And it seems that there are three or four. There's one particular place near me which has the wonderful name of Bunting Nook, which is a little a little road next to another park, ironically called Graves Park.
Ooh.
Which is also supposed to be both the home of a spectral hellhound and also a ghost of a soldier. So it seems that there are more things than meet the eye. But it's one of those things. I didn't realize there were as many ghosts in my local area until I moved here a couple of years ago, despite knowing the area fairly well.
Right.
I wasn't aware of any of it, most of it. There's a house around the corner that apparently had an incredible poltergeist case in the 80s. Somebody on the street behind me saw a disembodied head float across a bedroom one afternoon in the 90s. My local park has got a white lady that was seen several times chasing people. There's a ghost at the end of the road that's supposed to hang around on the bridge, Ladies Bridge.
So
you don't have to look far. Basically, you throw a stone, you probably hit a ghost around here.
Yeah. Or a hellhound.
You're in England, so
having
the whole place is haunted.
I've just been to Edinburgh. As well. So that was quite fun doing the ghost tour there and stuff. So that's because that was probably the only major place in Scotland I'd never been to before, and it was amazing.
Oh wow, neat.
So talking about Kevin Lee Nelson, I spoke at the Van Meter Visitor Festival last year. Tanya was there too. And Kevin, we all shared a cabin together, and
the long haired guy?
Yeah. And his speech at the Van Meter Festival was about hellhounds and the lore about the black dogs. So that's cool.
I love black dog stuff. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Kevin's an absolute gent. And a wonderful researcher, and probably one of the few people I know who owns more books than I do.
Oh wow!
Yeah, his library is jealousy inducing.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think he said he's got over 3,000.
Wow, that's insane.
That is insane. That's crazy.
A lot of books on the occult and things. So I was very jealous to see you there, Laura. That's one of my favorite cryptid stories, the Van Meter.
Oh, is it?
I love that story because it's balmy.
Yeah.
We got to, they gave us a, and it was all rainy and foggy. And we got to go on
the VIP tour.
A tour. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was Chad really neat, I thought.
Chad using you as sacrifices, pretending it was a tour.
Not that night.
It was, yes.
We love Chad, we're kidding.
He's a legend. Nice. Absolute legend. He's been as he jokes when he comes on, he's probably been on my show nearly as many times as I have.
Oh wow. Yeah, he was in the cabin also. We stayed downstairs though. We didn't hang out and talk to them so much because we had a kid with us, so we like played Minecraft. We had our son with us. He goes everywhere with us on those things, so he and I were playing Minecraft and such. So,
yes,
I've hung out with Chad Lewis though a couple times. So,
yeah, she has, like in Wisconsin. She went up there with like Badgerland people or something.
Yeah,
and did
Jeff
something
and
cool.
Oh yeah, Jeff and everybody. Yeah, great. Yeah, I'm an honorary Wisconsinite.
Tanya, did you have some?
Oh, are you?
Are you?
Apparently so. Yeah, I've had so many members. I've had so many people from Wisconsin on that they consider me one of them now.
Well, there you go.
I love
that's great.
You're a cheesehead.
Yes, that's what they are. There's a cheesehead. you're doing a book about poltergeist. So do you know much about the Battersea poltergeist story?
I know enough. It probably wouldn't take me long to sort of reach there and grab the original book about that particular story. I adore poltergeist. Yeah, I mean, the Battersea poltergeist is one of those prime examples of an incredible case that was reported on in all the major newspapers in Britain and abroad. There was a lot of American newspapers that came over to interview and take pictures. It was on the television, which in those days here we had two channels. So it was big news. It was on the radio. There was all kinds of things going on. It's a remarkable case, what Shirley went through.
And she was just a little girl, right?
Yeah,
she was 13 or something.
Yeah, yeah. She was sort of early mid-teens when it started, because it went on for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those where people try and explain it away because they'll just ignore things that they don't like. And
right.
Say, oh, well, she was faking it all. It was all for attention.
Yeah.
But it was a very small house. People were living, you know, you had five people essentially living on top of each other.
Uh-huh.
And these were not the kind of houses that you could get away with. You know, you basically were talking about, I mean, there are pictures out there. You can see how big the front room and the living rooms are.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that a teenage girl can sort of graffiti all over the house and smash the building up and nobody see her, then I find that remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, it's also one of the weird cases where things followed her to work, because she was working in a shop and items started thrown around I think she was working in a dressmaking department or something, and things started being thrown about, and they just thought it was a story that they made up. But obviously Danny Robbins did the series for BBC mm-hmm. Radio 4, The Battersea Poltergeist, yeah. which is phenomenal. Danny is incredible, and what he's done for the paranormal here in the UK in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. He did one about a witch farm too, that was very cool.
Yes, which was a case I was aware of primarily because of how strange it was, and the fact that it involved a paranormal investigator here in the UK called Eddie Burks,
mm-hmm.
who isn't spoken about a lot, who cleared a ghost from Coutts Bank, which is the bank of the Queen here in England.
Or the King now,
the royal family.
Yes, the King now, yeah.
So Eddie Burks ended up going to the witch farm and sorting it, because they couldn't get rid of it.
And he was the one that helped him, right? He was the one that actually helped him. That's what I thought.
So, yeah, I mean, the Battersea, and it just dropped off everybody's radar for sort of 30, 40 years. The problem is, as well, there was another poltergeist case in Battersea in the 1920s that Harry Price investigated.
Oh.
So, which my favourite part of that particular case was it knocked a policeman's helmet off with a piece of coal. It was so annoyed, this poltergeist in the 1920s. And so they presumed it must be some cheeky young chap who'd done
mm-hmm,
it.
Yeah.
But the assailant was unseen, living in the spirit realm. So everybody, whenever anybody mentioned the Battersea Poltergeist, they automatically, I don't know why they missed this archive.
Yeah. But
I think the guy that did a lot of the research wasn't particularly well known, and he never released a book about it.
Mm.
It was just kind of local pamphlets. And by the time he'd passed away, he'd kind of been forgotten, sadly. And Shirley didn't really talk about it a lot, because everybody had called her a liar and an attention.
Right. Right.
So
yeah. They even kidnapped her almost. Yeah. The cops did.
Yeah. 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 She was accused of shoplifting and all sorts and criminal damage.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was also very frightened that if she talked about him, he'd come back, and she never wanted him to come back.
Right.
So it was only sort of, I think, the book, The Prince and Poltergeist, The Princely Poltergeist, I think it's called, came out about 10 years ago. And then Danny's show came out about 3 years ago. And obviously from the book coming out and that, it kind of rose back to where it should be, which is one of Britain's best poltergeist cases. And when you look at how much media there is on it, it's remarkable that it took 50 years for it to come back around. It's
right,
crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's more about that case than anything that happened at Amityville.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot bigger and all of that. So, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And one
so, Paul, can you tell us about your poltergeist book?
Yes. So I'm trying to look at, ironically, as we're talking about the Battersea Poltergeist, cases like that. When I started reading up on things, I was amazed at how many cases were really well reported. I mean, there's one where I've essentially got 5 months of local news reports every week until it goes.
Wow.
And it was in the book when I was telling you about when I sort of had the spark of life reignited in me by this particular story that what this poltergeist was going to do. And I couldn't believe that I'd never read it. And I obviously without, you know, I'd got some books about poltergeist because it's always been my favorite part of the paranormal.
Yeah.
So I cross-referenced it and it wasn't in any other book. Apart from one of them had a small paragraph on it. And I thought, this just doesn't make sense. These books are talking about all kinds of poltergeists and I just didn't understand why, if this case was as genuine and as well reported, why is it not in all these other books? So I ended up reaching out to the local archive for the library, for the local newspaper there, and they've got everything. And they just sent me loads of scans and said, come over whenever you want, just let us know when you come in and we'll let you look at all the microfiche. So I had to remember how to use microfiche machines because it's been about 25 years since I've used one.
Yeah,
of those.
Yeah.
Blowing it up, like, I'm taking my eyes out and stuff. And they were brilliant. So, and they got, like I say, 5 months of newspaper reports every week of the newspaper
that's
saying this has happened and that's happened. And so then I began to realize that it wasn't the only one.
Right.
So why is that? I mean, even Life magazine came over from the US, interviewed the family. They did a big 4-page spread on it, full color. You know, if you're sending a journalist and a photographer over from New York to come to the north of England, you know,
it's something.
Exactly. And it just baffles me sometimes when I think about the paranormal. Why do some cases become so famous when often there's not a lot to them?
Right.
And other cases,
it's like one and done.
Yeah. Other cases, you've got, I mean, this one in particular, you'd got nearly 50 witnesses who'd seen things, interviews, independent verification, all kinds of things. And yet, some cases, you've got two people who are telling this amazing story. And you just sometimes, that's so far out there. Like dogs have been pulled through gates and cut in half and stuff, which is a story I recently reheard.
Don't tell Tanya that.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, it wasn't very good for me. And I just thought, this story is so out there. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And now a film company's optioned it. So we'll probably hear all about that. But anyway, I digress, as I often do. so it frustrates me and fascinates me that why do some cases gets the full treatment and the full respect of the paranormal world, and other ones that are really well reported just disappear. And I would imagine it comes down to who's doing the investigating, it would seem.
Probably so, yeah.
So I'm hopefully going to uncover some lost gems and drag them back out into the light, hopefully at some point this year.
I can't wait to read that. That'll be great.
Yeah.
And you love Bigfoot, right? Is he your favorite cryptid?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
I do.
He's
I've
your
always
cryptid, right?
Yes, he is. He is staring at me.
There he is.
I have the same one.
So I've since I saw that film when I was 8, it was UK TV the first time. The week after I watched Snow Beast, which terrified me. And then the week later, I was suddenly in love with big hairy monsters, whereas the week before, I couldn't sleep. It was one of the first films I remember scaring me.
They endeared themselves to you.
brought me back round. So now, I'm a big lover of hairy hominids from around the world, especially the Yowie as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, Rick, one of our co-hosts, loves Bigfoot. You cannot tell him anything bad about Bigfoot. So,
well, I'm I'm of the principle that even if only one report's true, that's all that matters.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, that's true.
You know, I've heard enough and seen enough and read enough to know that, you know, these are not people making things up. These are not people seeing bears. These are not people seeing hairy men running through the woods.
Right.
That, you know, I mean, sometimes it's one of those situations. It's like when, you know, how people used to be viewed who talked about seeing strange lights in the sky, and people used to go, oh, I think, and then tomorrow you're having a congressional hearing about the reality of UAPs tomorrow.
Yeah, they've been drinking too much. Sudden,
yes, the old adage. Yeah, the people mm-hmm. who drink too much and see all kinds of crazy things.
And now all of a sudden the government over here is like, yeah, we have to admit it.
Yeah. If a guy spent 50 years in the woods hunting, I'm going to listen to what that guy tells me rather than a scientist who looks at statistical analysis and decides that people can't tell the difference between a bear and a Sasquatch.
And a
right.
So you like the Patterson-Gimlin footage? What do you think about that?
Well, as a lover of bad monster movies, there isn't a suit as good as that at that period of time.
Yeah.
And if you want to prove it wrong, do it then. Recreate it.
Right. Right.
And I've said this all the time.
They've got a 4K rendering of it now. I don't know how they did that. I guess they can just fix the picture or whatever, but mm-hmm. I mean that made people think even more that it was true.
Yeah.
With the 4K absolutely. Rendering of that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can just see the muscle movement underneath the fur too. Like, you wouldn't get that if you were wearing a suit.
Not at all. And like I've said, I mean, I think Animal Planet, I've mentioned this before, Animal Planet tried to recreate it and spent £100,000, and it looked like a man in a monkey suit.
Right.
And a bad one at that. I'm not sure if you can even still watch the documentary they did because it's that bad. They've just So I've always said, if you want to prove it's wrong 100%, then all you need to do is recreate it using mm-hmm. nothing that you couldn't use before 1967.
Right, exactly.
And do it.
Yeah.
Because if it's so obvious to do, why doesn't anybody do it? Yes, I know you see hoaxes and fakes and things, but there's nothing on that level of that.
Right. Right. No, all the other fakes look pretty fake. We did a skeptics episode on Bigfoot, and Cole Harold is a researcher, and he found a lot of stories of the fake stuff, and it was I don't know who it was, but somebody had filled a monkey skin with like organs from badgers or something. I mean, you know, just to have something. And, you know, they found him out.
Yes, I know exactly who that is, and I won't mention their name.
I don't remember their name, but I was surprised.
Oh, I do. Don't worry. Well, there's loads of them, and certain individuals keep reappearing attached to certain things. I mean, that one, I think they actually were two policemen who tried to do that in conjunction with this particular
other person,
notorious researcher. And as soon as it became obvious that it wasn't real, he went, "Oh, I don't know anything about this."
Yeah.
So it happens. I mean, God, Bennett. I mean, I've seen stories about that guy who's got a head in his fridge, and then you've got like the Minnesota Iceman story, and I mean, it's interesting to see that when you look at somebody like Paul Freeman, who was absolutely castigated in the 90s and claimed as a hoaxer, seems to be having something of a revival now, because I think people are sort of realizing that, well, maybe he did do some things, but perhaps not for the reasons that somebody like we've been talking earlier did. He was just, because he knew it was real, he just wanted everybody else to realize it and probably went too far. But I certainly view Paul Freeman in a very different light to what I thought of the footage 10 years ago. I mean, my partner will often laugh about this, that she once, when we first started dating, she once came downstairs at 3 a.m. to see me transfixed, staring at the television. She said, "What are you doing?" And I just went, "I'm watching Bigfoot video." because I'd had a couple of drinks. And apparently I was just watching like the best Bigfoot footage ever that I'd found on YouTube.
Oh,
I'd
gosh. Been
watching it for like 3 hours.
Going, oh, gosh.
It's all real. And she's like, oh, my God. What kind of lunatic have I let into my life? And
all right.
She's still here 5 years later.
I was going to say,
that's
yeah.
Good. She's a keeper.
Secretly, she knows he's real.
Yeah.
Are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
I'll try my damnedest.
Okay. All right. So since you're in the UK, what is your favorite type of tea?
Yorkshire tea, obviously.
So what is that?
It's a we have our own brew, Yorkshire tea. We're very proud of it. Tea made in Yorkshire. It's obviously it's normal tea, but we just package it, call it Yorkshire tea, and we have Sean Reed promotes it and Patrick Stewart for us.
Cool.
Got
now
it.
You drink tea with milk and stuff like that, like regular
just
people
milk.
Over there.
Just milk. Just milk. Yeah. Oh yeah. But we do
so
that
you would just
lift our little fingers up.
Oh yeah.
See, yeah, I have to sugar and ice in my tea. I know that's terrible, but I'm from the South, so I have to have sweet tea.
I like green tea.
Yeah, well, I'm quite partial to chamomile and green tea as well. So pink grapefruit as well is very nice.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not had that. That would be interesting. And you put milk in that also?
No.
Okay, just that's just regular.
Well, you can
okay.
if you're odd, but
okay.
Do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
I've had hot dogs today. No.
Okay, I need to know.
What do you put on your hot dog?
Because it's not a fully sliced bun.
There, everybody says that. Yeah, everybody says it's because of the bun. Yeah, like Laura said, what do you put on there?
Mustard and fried onions.
Oh, yum.
Okay, no ketchup.
That sounds
that's good.
No, I'm not a fan of ketchup. I'm one of those weird Yorkshire.
Do you like tomatoes?
I like tomatoes, but I'm not
okay.
Very keen on tomato ketchup.
I know
ketchup.
People like that. Yeah, I know people like that.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Madonna.
Oh,
yeah.
Which Madonna?
Your age?
Which,
she was a good
age?
Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've
she
been
came
there
out
since the beginning.
Younger. Yes, me too.
Borderline.
Now she's a little odd. Back then, she
no
was.
No comment.
What is your favorite number?
13.
There you go. That's a good number.
It is. Did you ever have a nickname growing up?
Bestie.
Oh, that's cute.
Where I grew up, people tended to use your surname.
Okay.
Oh.
They just call you by your surname where I come from. But Bestie was the one that stuck. So they just sort of changed
they
your surname.
Shortened Bestel. Yeah.
Oh, okay. To make it longer than Paul. Yeah. Shorten it.
Right. what is your favorite breakfast food?
Bacon.
Okay, so not some weird British thing like beans.
No,
Tanya.
Beans or black. they do have a very strange breakfast.
I know.
Up to us, like pork and beans. Like you guys eat pork and beans for breakfast, right? Or just beans?
No, you have baked beans on top. Beans on toast.
See, and that's good to me. I'm a vegetarian, mostly vegan, and I like beans on toast. And you can also make beans into a spread. But also you eat black sausage and stuff, don't you?
Black
Luke
pudding.
Was telling me about black pudding. And
Yeah. Scotland and Ireland, they have white pudding as well.
What's in white pudding?
It's just similar things, but just not dyed.
Not blood. Oh, okay.
Yes, got everything in it but blood. Got all the other horrible things.
I mean, I understand the reasoning why people ate it a long time ago, but I don't understand the reasoning now. But I guess it's pretty tasty. I don't know. I haven't had it.
each their own. It's nice.
Yes.
And I mean, I can't really say much. I was eating haggis in Scotland the other week, so.
They have vegan haggis, though. I have a friend who's Scottish. She lives in England now. but she eats vegan haggis. And I'm like, why would you make up sheep guts? I don't understand. But apparently it's really good. I don't know. I can't say anything because I've never tried it.
My partner was not a fan, but yes, I quite liked it. You know, as it, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Right.
As I was in an
right.
So you have right. to
Luke,
sort of.
Luke said that if I come over there, he's going to take me and give me this vegan stuff. Because he said you can find vegan blood sausage and vegan, all that stuff. So he's going to, he said if I ever come over there, he was going to tour me around the food stuff.
Paul, what book are you currently reading? Or are you reading a couple?
I'm reading about four.
Wow. Okay. Can you name one?
And I can't. Mm? One is a special copy.
Is this all research for your?
Well, one of them is. So the one I'm currently reading hasn't been released yet. It is it's a very anticipated book by a world renowned cryptozoologist who doesn't live in the UK or America. And it's a book that we've been waiting sort of 10 years for
cool.
a sequel to. I'm currently rereading the wonderful Peter Underwood's Nights in Haunted Houses.
Mm. Ooh.
Because Peter Underwood was one of the greatest paranormal investigators this country's ever produced. And he's another one that, unfortunately, he passed away before the internet took off, because if he'd lived another 20 years, he'd be
famous.
And he's very much one of those people that he's in danger of being forgotten. And for me, he was an incredible researcher and, you know, wrote, 20 books on ghosts and the paranormal. So, if you've never read any Peter Underwood, you can find his stuff on Kindle really cheaply.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look that up.
All right. One more question. Toilet paper, over or under?
As in how it hangs?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Under.
Oh. There's no wrong answer.
No.
But that's wrong.
It depends. People say it depends on if you have a cat. Now, my cats don't do it, but I did have a cat before that would do this. And like, if you had it over, they would just, all the toilet paper would be in the floor. So a lot of people who have cats flip it upside down.
Mm. Or people just don't care.
Yeah,
yeah, some people don't care.
I mean, if you had me, you know, if you pushed me to make that choice, I'd have to say under, but I'm one of them. I'm not really bothered. I'm weirder about other things like washing up and stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't let anybody wash up in my house. I do it.
Oh, okay. Oh,
you mean like clean your house?
As in doing the washing up when we've eaten.
Yeah.
Even if I've cooked, I don't like other people washing up because nobody can wash up as well as I can.
Oh, I would be happy to have you visit my house then.
You can dry the pots, you can clear the plates, you can dry everything, you can put it away, but let me wash up. Simple.
Oh,
okay.
Well, there you go.
Whilst I'm
coming over for dinner, Tanya.
Whilst I'm listening to a podcast about Bigfoot.
Paul, thank you so much for being on the show today. Where can people find you?
Well, you can find Mysteries and Monsters across all streaming platforms and across all social media, as well as mysteriesandmonsters.com. And obviously the Ghost Story Guys is exactly the same. You can find myself and Brennan by looking for the Ghost Story Guys across everything else as well.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Awesome. And when can we expect your book? Do you have any time frame on that? This year, next year?
I am hopeful it'll be out by the end of the year.
Okay.
That'll be great.
I mean, I've had two publishers say they'd like to publish it, but they haven't read it yet. So
that's awesome.
We will see, because it's been gestating for a while, but I mean, I've got on top of things. I'm trying to get as many interviews in the bag as possible. So, I mean, I've got seven done to come out. So I've got basically I don't need to speak to anybody till June, but I will. I've got three shows in next. I've got three interviews in next week as well.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're a busy man.
It keeps me out of trouble. That's my excuse.
Or,
I cause less trouble, shall I say.
Tanya, where can people find us?
They can find us on all the socials, even Twitter. I'm going to stay there till it burns down. And we have merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. And we're going to some stuff. We're going to go to Mysteries, or no, what is it called? Monster Fest?
We're going to be at the Hodag Festival in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
Woo.
And that is May 20th. And then we're also going to be in Canton, Ohio at the Small Town Monsters Monster Fest, and that's June 3rd. And then you're going to be at Squonkapalooza, and that's in Pennsylvania, August. Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And that is August 26th.
And then after that, me and Cole are going to go try to find a ghost cow that her head floats above her body. So we'll see about that. I'll let you know how that goes. She's outside some slaughterhouse. I don't know.
keep me informed. I love it. I love a ghost story of animals.
Yeah. So I'll let you know. She's supposed to be walking around with her head unattached. So.
Brilliant. Well, and can I just say thank you so much for your lovely invitation and your kind conversations. And I'll send you some.
Please come back.
I'll be delighted to. I can't have done that badly if you'd want me back. And I'll send you a link about Yorkshire tea.
Perfect.
Okay, yes, I'll do.
Because, like I say, all the famous Yorkshire celebrities promote it. So, like Patrick Stewart does the adverts and Sean Bean does.
Oh, Patrick Stewart, my husband. I wish.
Huddersfield's finest.
Okay, well, cool. It was great having you.
Yeah, thank you again.
Pleasure.
Get some sleep.
Yes, exactly.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye, ladies. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Subscribe and review our pod wherever you listen. We have merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. See you later, creeps.